cause I thrive on mic. Just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd. No, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. I'm happy to be back, and I'm glad everybody's still hanging around listening to me and DB going on about all this stuff in the world for the past several years. Man, it's been a roller coaster ride, hasn't it, DB?
Yeah, man. I mean, my perspective has definitely changed over these years, and a lot of the things we came to fear have come to pass, but at the same time, enough people have woken up due to a lot of efforts of the alternative media, and like enough people finally remember the War of American Independence only needed 3% of the population to mobilize, and I believe we are right around that right now. So keep it going, man. The big one is DAPL. If we allow that to go through, it sets a precedent. So it's got to be fought as hard as it can be.
Yeah, that's going to be a huge showdown. And, you know, hopefully everyone listening tonight was able to catch our show on Monday night. We had a U.S. military veteran who went out to Standing Rock to go stand up for the protesters and stop the pipeline. And, you know, as soon as those veterans got out there, the sheriffs and the National Guard kind of backed off, and they kind of called it, you know, called like a hiatus in the construction, or at least in the, you know, crossing under that river, the lake over there, over by the Missouri River. But now it's back, and, you know, if you didn't catch the show Monday, I definitely recommend going back and listening to, you know, the perspective that some of these veterans have. And to me, it was very telling. We ended it kind of quickly there on Monday. DB, I mean, what did you make of what that young man was telling us?
I mean, he's right on. And the thing is, like, there's two ways to look at DAPL. One is that they're going to say, if the economy crashes, we're going to need the oil, we're going to need the energy reserves, because a lot of countries outside of the U.S. are not going to want to trade for dollars anymore, and what do we really have to offer, right? So there's that fear, and I understand where Trump's advisors are telling him that. But people that listen to this show, people that do their research, know we have not needed oil and gas, really, really have not needed it. And we can get by with technology that Russia's starting to put in right now, these so-called Tesla towers. You can see drone footage of them all around Moscow. If Moscow, meaning Russia, with the biggest proven oil reserves in the whole world, they make Saudi Arabia look like they have nothing. They're getting ready for a post-oil future. It has to tell you everything. I mean, we're really, at this point, sucking out the last of the easy-to-get reserves and the stuff close to the surface for fracking just for money, man. Because if they really cared about national security, every single home, every single place in this country would have panels, would have windmills, would have geothermal heating, and then we wouldn't need any foreign oil ever, and we could probably stop going to war.
Even Saudi Arabia is now trying to reposition itself for the post-oil future, and they're trying to, what they're trying to do is leverage all of their oil money and stuff into investments in clean energy. And so, yeah, I mean, you're right, dude. We're getting real close to this post-oil future. And, you know, look at, like, the Tesla company and the electric cars and the success they're having. And it's inspired several other companies to come out with cheaper electric cars. General Motors apparently has a relatively cheap electric car out. Nissan has one. A couple of these car companies do. Tesla's coming out with, what's it called, the Model 3, I think it is, that's coming out. It's only going to be like $35,000.
Yeah. Chevy brought out, I think, the Spark or something in the EV, and it won Car and Driver's Car of the Year. I think it was the first time Chevy had a Car of the Year in a long, long, long time.
And it's selling really well, too. I was just looking at that, and it's selling really well. So there's a huge appetite right now. People are ready to give up on oil and fossil fuels and shift over to a more efficient and, you know, renewable future.
Well, imagine, Nick, like, no oil changes on your car, like, ever. Like, just once a year you bring it in for some maintenance, and then you never pay at the pump. You just go home and plug it in. I mean, this is the future.
Yeah, and hold on. I got to pull up the article because I can't remember what they tested it against. Hold on. Just today, the Tesla Model S P100D, in, I guess it has a ludicrous mode. Now, I'm not too familiar with these cars, but it became the fastest street legal car in the United States. And this is an electric car. This is, you know, people think of electric cars as, like, you know, they think of Priuses and they think, like, oh, it's a kind of a wimpy kind of car. But no, this Tesla car is now the fastest production car in the United States. It's pretty wild when you think about it.
They have a lot of problem with traction because all the torque's available on tap from the first push. So there's no spooling up like an engine where the piston's got to pump. And it's the best of all worlds. The only bad thing about electric would be if there was like an EMP type of event where it would knock out the computer. But I mean, honestly, everything's going to get knocked out unless you have a carbureted car. So I guess that would be a good backup.
Oh, man. There you go. You got a point there. So let's cover a couple of news stories here. You got anything on your radar before I pull up some of the stuff we covered today?
Just real quick, I don't know if there's anybody out there that's listening from the South that leans more towards the left, but there was a governor, Don Siegelman, who Karl Rove essentially made him go away because he was a Democrat in Alabama who was trying to install a really revolutionary idea. He was going to take all of the profits from their lottery and put it into their public school system, and they knew that from their models that they were going to have so much excess that the poorer people of Alabama, the people that could never afford college, would be able to go for free on this program. And wouldn't you know it, during the Bush era, the guy goes to jail. He just got out. So just look him up. Don Siegelman, Siegelman. He's an unsung hero, an untold guy that was working for the people in a state that, well, let's face it, it's basically red every single county. And I know SM's from there, right, Birmingham? So he probably will have that guy, some of his info on his show. But just look him up. I mean, it's a time when people that are political prisoners are being freed. Make of that what you will, but it's very obvious to me there's a new regime in right now.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, Birmingham is probably one of the few counties or cities in Alabama that would call itself a liberal city. I'm pretty sure they've got Democratic mayor and, you know, city council and stuff. But yeah, the state itself is extremely, you don't get much more conservative than that. In fact, they still have dry counties in Alabama, man. And I guess probably a lot of people from around the country probably don't even know what dry counties are, because I didn't know what they were until I was over there. And I'm like, wait, there's counties where they don't sell alcohol? Not allowed? That's crazy. It's insane.
Yeah, we don't sell it. We don't sell it here on Sunday in the stores. You have to go to a bar or a sporting event. So Yeah, it's prevalent, man. A lot of these old fundamentalist type, laws and rules are very prevalent. So it was easy to see why this guy got railroaded. He was attacking very, very fundamentalist conservative values of people saying, pick yourself up by the bootstraps. You don't really need free college. Well, you know what? That was true 50 years ago when you could work full part-time and afford to pay all of your bills. But now with a $40,000, $50,000 semester bill, you're leaving college with like – I read a story that a guy got out of medical school with $1 million in debt. You'll never – I don't even care if you make 300 grand a year as a doctor. How do you pay that interest off? I mean, that's where we're at right now. And even though DeVos is extremely unqualified, we're at the point now where the educational system like basically just needs to get torn down and redone. I mean, because it's not benefiting anybody. And Siegelman was going to make it work, and that's why they put him away.
Yeah, we need some rethinking done over there in the education system and maybe some new ideas. Something that is really good is a lot of these colleges have made their curriculum free online. I think that's a great way to learn, learn stuff online.
But the problem is they hold you hostage with the diploma, Nick. So, like, you may be the smartest guy in the world, like, Goodwill Hunting, but it doesn't matter if you don't have that degree because you can't even get your foot in the door. And that's the system they've set up, and it's backfiring. I mean, we have millions of people with degrees that can't get work. And the reason why is because their degrees are in things where there's no more work. But they weren't told that in college. They were said, yeah, go ahead and get that whatever contemporary studies degree. What are you going to do with that? You know, so we've got to change, man. We have a high tech future ahead of us that we're going to get left in the dust. We need techs. We need people that go to like trade schools for real.
Yeah, good point that I want to elaborate on here. So, first of all, there's a lot of news about Betsy DeVos, and I mean, I don't really know who could have been elected or put into Trump's cabinet to run the Department of Education that could actually fix it. It seems like every attempt at reform gets mired in special interest and gets co-opted by either the unions or the corporate world, and it gets, the students get the shaft. Looking at our schooling system, I mean, it's the prices have grown exponentially while the quality of education has pretty much been on a flat line for a very long time. So we need some new forward thinking done on that, from that angle. I think internet learning could help lower the costs and compete against traditional colleges and stuff like that. And that'll help, put off some of the, or try to lower down some of these ridiculous prices that have gone up at some of these colleges, man. I can't even imagine it. I remember when I was back in my early days after high school, when I started going to college, I couldn't even think about going to a four-year college because there was just no way I was going to be able to afford it. And so I basically went to community college until I dropped out to start a business. I've learned a lot of stuff on my own since then, and so there's a bunch of different ways you could learn stuff. Like you said, trade schools, community colleges, regular college, just learning stuff from reading on your own online, doing research, online schools. I mean, all kinds of ways of doing stuff. The reality of the situation is the Department of Education, dude, it's gotta go. It's we don't need Betsy DeVos running it. We need to get rid of it altogether. We don't need the federal government telling us how to teach our children here in San Diego. I mean, we live a very, very long way away from from Washington D.C. I don't need some billionaire lady in D.C. telling me how to teach kids. It's ridiculous.
That's what they're doing, but what they're going to do is just dry up the Fed funding, and they're going to throw out vouchers to individuals. So make of that what you will. We all understand how the average citizen's personal responsibility is not the greatest in this country. I can see vouchers being abused. I mean, isn't there a chance people just pocket the money somehow? I mean, the thing to me is, like, yeah, I get it. I get that they want to cut federal funding and let states tell them how many pupils they have and cut them a check and the states do what they want with it. I get it. But I mean, at some point we've got to crack the it's a prison pipeline is what they're doing now. So, for me, if I was to have a child, I would never send them to a public school now because it's a prison pipeline, and we've got to change that, man. It's just creating the next generation of people that are going to work for 12 cents an hour inside a jail somewhere. It's prison junior.
12 cents an hour, man. That sounds pretty good. No.
Yeah, and then they tax them on that.
and you're paying 30% on top of that in taxes, right? That being said, looking into the, you know, forward looking, dude, and that's what we've been on this show for a long time. And this is kind of a nostalgic show for us, because ever since we've launched the current version of our website, which was like 3 or 4 years ago, we've kind of had this basic ragtag website. Well, I'm happy to announce that we're about to relaunch a really badass new website. Of course, it's going to remain the antimedia.org, but this new website is going to be the destination or the hub of independent media. We've got a bunch of partners on board with this, and we're going to continue producing our own articles, but that's only going to be like one third of what we're doing from this weekend moving forward. We're also going to be the premier aggregation place for independent media. So basically, you can come to the Antimedia to find articles from all the best independent media websites around the world, and you can come to our website to find them. And also, a third of the website is going to be based on what the people reading or listening to the show tonight think is important. So you guys will be able to find news links or YouTube videos, or let's say even like this radio show or a radio show that you listen to, you'll be able to post it on the new Antimedia website, and you can make the front page of the Antimedia if people upvote it. So there's an upvoting system. It's like, I can't really explain it too well over the radio, but this thing is going to be badass. It's going to be live on Monday morning. If you guys want to get a sneak preview of it, go over to theantimedia.org over the weekend. You know, we're going to be having, it's going to go live over the weekend, and it's not going to be fully running until Monday morning, but you'll be able to get a sneak peek at it over the weekend. But Monday morning, you know, we need everybody listening tonight to go over there, sign up for an account. You know, all you need is an email and a password. We're not going to ask for any personal information. But all the password is for is so that you could upvote, downvote, comment on the articles. We've kind of combined several features that are kind of like Reddit, and then it's going to look kind of like the Drudge Report and Huffington Post combined. And of course, it's going to be an anti-establishment independent website that's going to be hosting various opinions from, you know, from libertarian, conservative leaning opinions all the way down to extremely leftist, anarchist, socialist, people. What we're going to be doing is hosting, news and viewpoints from all across the political anti-establishment spectrum. And so this is a place for people to come together for the news, the independent news industry, to kind of establish a ecosystem that's completely independent of Google and Facebook. I mean, this is a revolutionary step in our evolution here. This is our major move, man. Like, we need everybody's help. This is going to push us up to the next level and give us a huge leg up. And I'm so proud of this website. You guys are going to love this thing. It's like, it makes Huffington Post look like shit. It makes Drudge Report look like a 2-year-old made it, because it honestly does look like a 2-year-old made the Drudge Report. But our new site is going to be so badass. It's optimized. It's built mobile first. So it's like, we instructed our engineers to build it like phone first. It's the experience is supposed to be super optimized for the phone. And of course on your laptop or your computer, it looks great as well, but like phone first. Get in there on Monday morning or over the weekend, as soon as it comes up. Sunday it'll be up for sure, but for sure by Monday morning, make an account, start upvoting, start posting articles, start posting videos from YouTube, from people you follow that put out good viewpoints. And you guys can help make the front page. And the other thing, too, is that all of the articles, including the stuff that our writers are writing and the stuff that we're aggregating, all of it is like the order of these articles. Like, so they rise, the most prominent news stories rise up to the top of the page, and then they have an image that'll show. And they only rise up if they get your votes and your comments. So if you upvote articles that you think are important, they rise up to the top. If you downvote articles that you think are unimportant, they sink to the bottom or they go off the front page altogether. So, you know, we've developed this system, and it, like I said, it's borrowed some algorithmic stuff from Reddit, and it's going to be a whole new experience for independent media, and we're trying to push the entire industry up a notch, and hopefully it works. We need all your help. We need everybody to spread the word. But dude, we've been going at this for years now, man. You know, we've got our blog up, theantimedia.org, right now. This blog that we've got it built for like $600, like 4 years ago, and it's done a lot. I can't tell you how many page views we've gotten overall, but we get like 3 to 4 million a month over 4 years. I mean, we're talking like over 100 million views on this website that we paid $600 for. So, you know, we're really upping the game at this point, and I'm like super excited about it. I just wanted to get that out there to you guys because I haven't had a chance to talk about it on the radio show because we've been so busy with the news, man, and with the new direction of the radio show and everything. The new radio page on theantimedia.org, it'll be the same thing, theantimedia.org/radio. We've remodeled the radio page. It looks really nice and clean. We're putting in an alert system, so if you're like reading the website and then the radio show comes on, there'll be like a little alert that comes up telling you the radio show is on and stuff. So you know, all that stuff is really good. And the other thing too is this is really good for like people who run their own independent websites, news websites, or if you have your own YouTube channel or you have your own podcast, radio show, anything, or if you know somebody that has one, I mean, you can put their content right onto the front page of the Antimedia. As long as you post it, get a couple of upvotes, and boom, it's on the front page. So this is, you know, really a way to get everybody's voice out there, man. And so I'm just like super happy about it. Anyway, back to what we were talking about, dude, because all of this stuff is related. Jake had a great article up today on the Antimedia about Amazon's new grocery stores. I don't know if you saw this one yet, but dude, Amazon is coming out with grocery stores that are going to be basically run by robots. And they're just going to be like two or three guys working there to make sure everything goes smoothly. But this is the future, man. Again, this radio show has been kind of a forward-thinking radio show, and we've kind of predicted a lot of things that have happened. Of course, I got it completely wrong with Trump. I didn't think Trump was going to win. But other than that, we've been fairly accurate with some of our predictions and stuff. And this is one of the things, DB, that you and I have been talking about for the last 4 years, is the rise of automation and robotics and the effect that it's going to have on the workforce. And the fact is, nobody in the political arena is talking about this. And this is probably the biggest issue of our time. And nobody is talking about this at all.
They can't. It's just like, it's the same reason they can't stop us using gas and oil, even though we've got to be dwindling down to a percentage that's making it very, very uneconomical. And they're just kind of floating this last era of oil and gas as a control measure. I mean, things are on the change in 5 to 10 years. People think that we're going to have another generation of children that will have jobs. It's not guaranteed anymore. I mean, you can't even find employment now if you don't have certain skills or knowledge and abilities. So, yeah, man, we're coming to a point where we're going to be at a crossroads. Do we have peace on earth where we all are going to get unlimited educational opportunities? Because trust me, we're probably closer to 9 billion now. I was reading some census figures. So I think we're pushing our limits for our current tech, but that doesn't mean we can't take a huge jump and a lot of stuff suppressed. So there's that way. The other way is the elites have been pushing is a war, right? And we don't want that. And the third thing is, and I'm not even sure how close we are, maybe we're there already from things I've read, is we can spread out into the solar system at least at first. Nick, I think you saw that they landed on Europa, right? And they drilled into the upper crust and they found an ocean underneath. So there's opportunities for life. I mean, Mars can be, at least we can start to plan to terraform it. And we can start thinking outside of just this planet, and we really should, because if a big asteroid hits, we'll all go back to the Stone Age if we even survive it. So we've got to spread out. To me, those are our three options. Do you see anything else? We got to have either peace and advanced tech, space exploration, or the elites push us into some kind of crazy war. That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, man, I think that's a pretty decent assessment. I think the most realistic thing for the average person on the Earth right now is to, you know, the fact of the matter is there's not nearly enough spaceships to get everybody off the Earth, right? And so the majority of people here, you know, 95%, pretty much stuck here, you know. And so some of these super rich people, I mean, the same guys that are buying islands in New Zealand right now and preparing for the proletariat uprising and stuff like that, those are the same guys that are going to be able to afford to move to Mars or live in outer space if shit hits the fan down here too bad, or if we ruin the planet. The other 95% of people that are just basically regular working class people, you know, we're stuck here. We got to deal with what we have, basically. And if we're not real, careful, it's going to be really nasty, and it's going to be almost uninhabitable if we don't take care of the planet and take care of and be responsible with the development of robotics and artificial intelligence. One thing that I think is really a crossroad right now is something that Stephen Hawking actually warned about, is the ownership of the robotics. And this is what a lot of futurists have talked about how robotics are going to be the liberation of humanity. And I think that is a possible scenario, but they could also wind up being our enslavement and take advantage of us, like kind of like a Terminator type of scenario. And I think we're at the crossroad right now, and unfortunately, it's looking like going in the wrong direction, like towards maybe a Terminator or like a techno oligarchy, technocracy, I guess, some form of horrible ruling class where a handful of extremely rich own every single robot and we're all basically displaced by these robots. That's the direction we're going. I mean, Jeff Bezos, Google, Facebook, these handful of companies are basically putting most of the resources into developing this technology, artificial intelligence, robotics, automation, and that kind of stuff. So I think the future we should be trying to move towards instead is a future of shared ownership or open source technology, where, you know, the technology isn't monopolized by Google or by Amazon, but it's shared freely and everybody can tap into it. And instead of saying, oh, all the robots are going to take everybody's jobs, like, everybody gets a robot, you can send the robot to go do the job for you, and then you still, you know, get the resources that are created by that robot.
Well, you go to school, Nick, right? You pursue your passion that you're excellent at. I mean, most people, if they could put in 8 to 10 years into something without worrying about survival, would become amazing at that. So I think this is what's going to open up for us. Secondly, a lot of people are afraid that it's going to be misused by the police, and that initially could be true. But imagine a world where you have a personal security robot at your house. You are completely or close to as safe as possible. And then when you go outside, you know, you're going to have the exact same thing, where you're going to have essentially a security state around you. Is that ideal? It's ideal if there's some way to get privacy, period. But if we're all on a grid, no. But that's kind of the way it's going. The fight's going to be, how do we implement this tech? I hate to break it down to any Luddites out there. Technology is not going to stop. It cannot stop. There's just too much money pushing it forward. If we were to maybe absolve the banking system and say, let's only create benevolent technology through a revolution, maybe. But what I'm trying to say is people are going to follow the money and things are going to be weaponized. And it's up to us as a society to make that unpalatable for the evil people. And maybe we can segue into Sessions, Nick, because a lot of people don't like the guy, but he was definitely nominated. He made it through easier than DeVos did. And he was saying all along, he's going to start actually cleaning out our government. So here's the thing. A guy like Elon Musk is invaluable, because he can kind of push us in the way where we don't use our tech to dominate ourselves and kill each other and enforce global slavery. We need more of those guys. And when people, you know, dog on him for working with Trump, who's he supposed to work with? He's got to work with the current administration. So thank God for guys like him, dude, because otherwise you have these futurists that want to create the control grid, and there's not really a way to get out of it once it's put in.
Yeah, man. I mean, you're right on, especially on this fact about technology, dude. You know, humanity made the decision a long time ago. When our ancestors first started farming and first started understanding agriculture and animal husbandry and all that stuff, we decided that we were no longer going to evolve biologically. We were instead going to evolve, you know, with technology as a supplement to our biological capabilities, you know.
And don't forget when we set the fire in the first cave, Nick.
Yeah, fire too. Fire was one of the first, you know, advanced uses of technology, you know. But ever since the time of the advent of agriculture, it changed everything. You know, it created the ability to create cities and states and empires, and also economics. You know, this is when you started getting excess, you know, supplies, surpluses that you could trade or sell. But at that point, you know, humans stopped evolving. You know, we basically, the humans that are around today, biologically, we're almost identical to our ancestors that were around about, you know, 15, 20,000 years ago. Sure, they look a little different. And of course, now there's a bunch of like race mixing and, you know, the humans look a little different, but biologically we're very, very similar. The thing that's changed is our rapid advance in technology. And, you know, that can't be, you know, you can't ignore it. There's going to be people out there that are going to try to stop technology. I think that's what you're saying, Luddites, right? That's the word for it, I believe. You know, there's always going to be people that are going to be like trying to stop technology, but that's like trying to stop the flow of a river. You know, I think it's a lot easier to divert the flow of a river than to stop it. I mean, even if you build a dam, the river starts building up. You have to let the dam, you know, let water out. Otherwise it overflows and breaks. And that's the same thing with technology. Technology is like a river. You can't just stop it. But right now what we're dealing with is the flow of this river maybe going in the wrong direction. We need to start diverting it to a way that is going to benefit more people instead of just benefiting Jeff Bezos that owns Amazon or Mark Zuckerberg that owns Facebook or the people that run Google. If we allow it to continue going, I mean, it's going to be so concentrated that we are all going to be enslaved by robots. And I hate to put it out there like that, but it's the fact, dude, man. That's what's going to happen. And you know what? Stephen Hawking is very concerned about the same exact scenario. But that's why we have this show, so we could think forward and look and try to, you know, give people the information where they could make better choices going into the future. And, you know, this is what we're dealing with now. You know, we're in the point where in the next 5 years, these Amazon stores are going to be live, and there's going to be Amazon stores everywhere where there's no more humans working in the grocery store. You know, the gas stations have pretty much, many gas stations are already automated. You know, you go up, you pay it with a credit card, and you fill up your gas tank. I mean, if you go to the grocery store, there's already kiosks. The fast food joints, there's going to be kiosks in there if they aren't already. You name it. I mean, many, the majority of jobs that are done right now by people who aren't highly skilled or highly educated, those jobs are all gone. They're gone in the next 20 years, all of them. And so, like you said, DB, either people start getting extremely educated and specialized and skilled at things, or you're going to wind up on the government dole and you're at their mercy. I mean, do we want a scenario where robots take away all the jobs and then everybody's reliant on the government to give them handouts to survive? I mean, that sounds like very dystopian to me.
And they're not going to let you have kids because that doesn't go into their plan. They're just going to take it all away from you. They're going to chip you, and they're going to put something in you that shuts off your ability to reproduce. It's going to be simple. They already patented it. You've seen that Bill Gates has been testing it out in Africa. It's just a simple thing they implant in you, and it turns you off. You can't have kids anymore. You can look it up. I really don't want to even get into it because it makes me sick what he's doing over there. But it's simple to make a control grid if we allow it. How do we fight it? Well, here's how you fight it. There's people that control these robots. There really are. There's people right now that if they wanted to unleash a battalion of killer Terminators, they're probably in a prototype ready phase and they could probably do it. But obviously we outnumber them and there's still way more good people than bad. And the main thing is to get rid of the bad people as much as we can, get them out of power. We know that power corrupts you, absolutely. And we're kind of rapidly going towards a future where maybe some of the policies are going to be left up to algorithm, because humans are way too easily corruptible. Just, it's too simple to get people to pass bills that hurt all of society for the few because they're compromised with heinous crimes. And it's too simple to do that. So we got to get around that somehow. And we've talked about Bit Congress, Nick, in the past. That's going to be our first step of using tech for us. People go, well, anybody can just buy a phone. And well, no, your phone's attached to a credit card and your name. So it's as good as a vote. It really is. I mean, your identity is more secure on that phone. And I'm talking about a phone, not a throwaway, not a freaking prepaid, but something that is attached to your identity. That should be a vote. You should just be able to vote on your phone on voting day. And, you know, if you can't make it to a voting booth, then we should have voting day and you're off of work. So, I mean, God, dude, we've got to get going on it, because I don't even think it's 20 years, Nick. I think it's like 5 to 10 where they could pull out some shit and go, this is for your own safety. We're establishing, you know, cameras. These things are going to be on every light post, these drones. If they see any violent activity, they're going to come down and subdue all the people. I mean, we're there already. They haven't been able to roll it out yet.
Yeah, dude. You know, I think there is a very good case to replace government with technology. You know, as long as we're going to be in this big, you know, this big super state system where we've got hundreds of millions of people falling under one government, it's really hard to make the case. In fact, it's mathematically impossible to make a case that there's a good government that could represent most people. It was recently that idea was recently debunked by mathematicians at some prominent colleges. You know, we can no longer rely on like one guy or 600 people to tell the other 330 million of us what to do. It just doesn't make any more sense. It literally doesn't make sense. And so replacing those people with technology, I think that's, you know, a feasible proposition.
California should start it off. That should be what we do. Like,
what
Governor
better
Brown,
place? What better place well, to do it?
Yeah, because Brown and Feinstein are basically at this point royalty. They've been in the game so long that they're 100% compromised. You know, everything they do is for big donors, period. So
Feinstein, Nancy Pelosi. Yeah.
Just get rid of them. Get rid of them. We don't, I mean, here's the thing, man. People should be in maybe 2 or 3 terms and then that bounce out. Like these 30 and 40 year senators, these people still believe Gallup polls. That's calling people on a home phone. That's why any poll from any major news organization is bunk, because they're calling people on a home phone. That's like 65, 70-year-old people. They're not the pulse. So everything just needs to be redone, man, because there's power structures, what I call legacy organizations. They have not and cannot evolve. They are control mechanisms that no longer apply unless you're one of the generation that believes them to be truth. WAPO's fake. New York Times is fake. What's real is, well, what you're creating, Nick, what people are actually doing, getting out onto the ground. I mean, I saw today a video of deliberate trash dumping onto the Ossetai camp at Standing Rock. And then they took pictures and said the people left a huge mess there. This PR campaign is pathetic, but I still see people sharing the stupid trash pile and going, look at the stupid protesters leaving the trash. They must not be for the environment. No, a huge dump truck came and dumped it there. So, I mean, we're in an information war and a psyop. Like, we've been preparing, Nick, for the last several years, but there's people waking up today that are like, oh my God, what in the hell is going on? And everybody listening, you're part of the people that will guide the people that slowly awake, because the mainstream media is a lie, man. It really is. Maybe a local channel, like a local news station that's on the ground getting the story, cool, they're legit. But CNN, MSNBC, Fox, all those, they're so compromised that their news reports are pure opinion at this point.
They're a joke, man. These big mainstream corporate media outlets are part of the parasitic ruling class. They're the part of the group that takes advantage of us. You know, they give them the ability to take advantage of us. I mean, look what they did to Bernie Sanders. Look what they did to third parties. Look what they did to Jill Stein. Look what they did to anybody that steps slightly out of the mainstream discourse in this country. They either get destroyed or completely blacked out. And that's CNN for you. That's MSNBC. That's Fox News. That's ABC. That's CBS. That's all of them. What we need now is raw material. We need raw information. We need live footage. We need direct firsthand accounts. We don't need Washington Post telling us that, oh, someone from the CIA who wished to remain anonymous tells us that someone else tells them that this happened. And we don't need that shit anymore. That shit is manipulation. They can never back it up with legit evidence. I mean, look at this narrative about, first of all, us being Russian propagandists. I mean, where in the hell is my Russian money? If they had it, they would show it. If they would show they would show the evidence. Where is the evidence that Russia hacked the election to elect Donald Trump? I'm not a fan of Donald Trump, but I also am not a fan of pushing anti-Russian propaganda either. Washington Post and everyone else who puppeted their reports came up with the most outlandish shit about Russia and how they're like controlling the West and this, that, and the other, and they elected Trump. Dude, Russia's economy is like half the size of California's alone. I mean, Russia is so much less powerful than these people are pretending to think. Now, China, on the other hand, China is a much different story. China is now a superpower. But, yeah, you know, this over... Now, don't get me wrong. Russia is...
Well, Russia needs
powerful.
Us.
They're powerful because they're so smart with the way they use the limited resources that they have. They're way smarter at it than we are.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, Russia isn't the problem right now, dude. Like, we should not be worried about Russia. And Russia is not spreading, you know, propaganda that is overpowering the New York Times and the Washington Post and everyone else. Like, they're leading us to believe that was all bullshit. You know, it was bullshit.
I mean, they do hack. We hack each other, but the election results, the proof of primary election fraud was given up by insiders from the DNC, and I believe they paid for it with their lives. And this will come out. And it was because of this corruption that the takedown took place within our own government, because Clinton, the foundation was just, it had its tentacles everywhere, and it was destroying our national security with things being sold, secrets being sold. And it made me and you unsafe, and it resulted in thousands of deaths worldwide, not to mention Libya, which probably resulted in hundreds of thousands of deaths. And
at least 50,000 deaths that can be attributed to the U.S. overthrow of Libya. But that's right. Just only on paper.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, man. The hacking was... here's the thing. You can say everybody hacks. Everybody that can hacks each other. And that's to keep, you know, an economic advantage primarily for the big fortune companies of each country. It doesn't matter. And most countries' Fortune 500 companies are government owned. So naturally, the government's hacking on behalf of its resource builders and its economy builders. But what I just wanted to make a point was, we've been allies with Russia, and the Cold War was fabricated, and it was designed to boost the military spending on both sides, okay? So we were both played. We know that when the wall fell, and we know that because we haven't fought them since, period. Now, have we done proxy wars? Sure, because we didn't want them to take Afghanistan. We wanted it, and now we have it, but we're seeing the price we're paying for it. So maybe they were smart to let it go. And another thing is that they need us, Nick. When you say they don't have a resource base, that's only partially true. They just don't have the ability to extract it. There's only one company that can get to their deep oil, and that's ExxonMobil. So there you go. if you want to see what happened with this election, it wasn't really a marriage of intelligence services or somebody hacking somebody and buying somebody or somebody having blackmail material or any of that. What it was they found Russia had unlimited supplies of oil, but it had to get thrown out through Crimea. So this is how things work, man. We're talking about a minimum of $1 trillion of oil in Russia, maybe twice that. And that can really, that can drive both of our economies for like the next decade easily.
Yeah. No, of course, don't get me wrong. I think Russia is probably the most resource rich country in the world. Look at the size of the place.
They just can't get to it.
and minerals and stuff they have there. Yeah, but their population is pretty low now because they never really recovered after Stalin and World War II. Never really recovered after that. Most of the USSR had a big population, but most of that lie in Eastern Europe. Those are all gone now. They're no longer part of Russia.
Ukraine, like 50 million, right?
let's see what.
Because I know Ukraine is huge, which is why they were so pissed when it separated from them. It was like the breadbasket.
Yeah. So, Russia's current population as of 2013 was 143 million estimated. So they're less than half the size of the United States by population, but by area, they've got almost double, and so
they don't trust China, Nick, because they fought each other too many times on that border. So they'd rather go with us because we've fought together against countries and saved each other's butts multiple times, then trust China, because if they let China come in, China will just take their resources and by brute force. So trust me, everything's Freakonomics in this world. I can't wait for Freakonomics 3 to come out, because it really is just simply, where's the money? How can we move the money? How can we keep the economy going? Yes, to make oligarchs richer and richer, but also just straight up, we have so many people in the world, we've got to keep them fed one way or another.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, it's crazy complicated out there. And we've got this global kind of economic process that relies on too few of people to call the shots. And that's why I've been, talking more and dealing more personally with like decentralized currencies. And, I've been dealing in Bitcoin and stuff like that recently, and starting to learn about all that stuff, because I think the best route, of course, peace and trade and prosperity, but the best route I think for the future of freedom in the world is decentralization. And that's why I've been a big proponent of the CalExit, California independence movement. I was a big proponent of the Scottish independent movement, which recently barely didn't pass over in the UK. And then, of course, for Brexit. I mean, Brexit, don't get me wrong. The people that were pushing the Brexit propaganda in England were doing it the complete wrong way. I mean, they turned it into some xenophobic, racist, nationalistic thing. When in reality, they should have been embracing decentralization, independence, self-determination, self-government. I mean, these are great ideas. You don't have to turn it, we need to break off from Europe because of Muslims. We got to ban the Muslims out. The people do these things backward. Instead of proposing good ideas, they use them to just scare people. And then Brexit, the people who run the Brexit just use it to take advantage of the people in England now, instead of letting they broke away from the EU, but now their ruling class is just going to take advantage instead. And unfortunately, Trump has done a lot of the same things. Instead of pushing for independence of the United States economically, he's pushed this nationalistic, xenophobic message, which is actually not constructive. It's divisive. It drives people apart. It actually makes the problem worse. Trying to act like, Mexico is bad and Muslims are bad. That's not the problem. Like, you have a partially good message here in the fact that, the U.S. should be more independent. They should be more self-determining. They shouldn't be having alliances all over the world. These are good ideas. But then to go and justify it by using like this idea that, the reason we're saying this is because Muslims are bad and Mexicans jacked us for all of our shit. It's like, no, dude, you're getting it backwards. Like, you were halfway there. Independence and self-government are great ideas, and I think that's the direction we should be going, but not because of xenophobia, not because of nationalism, not because of protectionism, but just because the basic fact is freedom should only be decided by individuals themselves. No one should be telling us how we should live and how we should be governed, or
That utopian idea, it can only be enforced through personal responsibility and security. That's what people need to understand. We cannot move forward if you're not willing to protect yourself and provide for yourself, because otherwise governments continue to grow and always get worse.
Exactly, man. And that's why we need to start getting into this more independent looking economic situation. And let's go back to the robots that we're talking about earlier. Now, if you had a decent piece of land, you had a robot that could do all the farming for you.
What a dream.
You had most of the things that you needed to take care of.
Security drone on your roof.
Yeah. We'd be a lot less susceptible to having to rely on some giant government to tell us, what to do and to feed us and to clothe us and to educate us and all this other things.
I'd move back, Nick. But the thing with CalExit is that they're tricking people, and they're going to have a massive overreaching, centralized government there under like Brown and Feinstein as king and queen. That's what you got to worry about, because any push for independence is always super rich people that just don't want to pay taxes. That's what I think, man. Like, this is being pushed primarily by the Bay Area because it's going to make millionaires billionaires. But if it's done where the people take it, not these big businesses, not Google, not Apple, you know what I mean? People, if they're like, listen, we provide the labor, we do the hard jobs, we make the infrastructure work, and we want to control everything, then it works perfectly. But if you allow the government to just become this tyrannical, overreaching California government, that's going to be just way, way, way crazy, because then there's no balance from the rest of the states.
Exactly, dude. We don't want a California oligarchy. That's not what we should be working for, and that's not how we should... Like you said, man, Feinstein... I mean, we got Feinstein, we got Jerry Brown, lifetime politicians. We've got Nancy Pelosi, who... What was she just saying the other day that she thought we were still under President Bush or something? Like, Pelosi needs to be retired, dude, forcefully. If California becomes independent from the rest of the United States, I mean, the current politicians aren't really the cream of the crop. They're not very good. And like you said, dude, there needs to be a complete, overturning of the entire California government, dude. Like, the whole government needs to be purged and redone, of course.
Yeah, 'cause these people pushing stuff through, like Brown and Kamala Harris and everybody like out there pushing all these things and being defiant to the Fed. Do you want those people to be running a independent country? Those people are like the worst. So just be careful what you get.
Yeah, very true, dude. Very true. And so, I think the route we should be going forward is decentralizing. This is also what can be done with the news. And so what we're going to be doing is on the Anti-Media homepage is aggregating raw content too, raw tweets, raw video, raw posts from people who are authoritative voices in the new, independence philosophical movements going on. Like I said, broad spectrum stuff here from left to right, dude. Like, there's a lot of good thinkers out there. And without us getting like extremely dogmatic, and there's varying opinions just on our show. There's varying opinions, because I know you, DB, both you and Jake kind of were a little sympathetic toward Bernie Sanders and stuff. And of course, I wasn't. And we even on the show, we've got three hosts that are on here on a regular basis, and all three of us have varying political opinions, but. The thing that we have in common here is that we all agree that we shouldn't be forcing them and forcing other people to follow them, right? And so that I think is the common ground here. It's not that we, it's not that this idea that I see so many people having is that, oh, I'm going to convince everybody to believe what I believe. I'm going to convince everyone to think that I've got the right idea. It's never going to happen. What we need to convince each other of is that, look, we've all got different ideas, and let's allow each other to practice them without forcing our ideas onto other people. I mean, how hard is that to get? I mean, why is it so hard for us to just accept the fact that we can have freedom and not impose it onto other people? It really blows my mind that it's such a hard topic for people to get.
It's because
even in the circles of people who are like on the fringes and the most advanced philosophically speaking, I mean, even just within the anarchist movement or the libertarian movement, there's a left wing and a right wing to it, and these are people on the forefront of political thinking right now, and they're still caught up in this idea that they're going to convince everyone that their idea, their way of governing or their way of self-government or whatever it is they're pushing is the right way. That's not really the route we should need to go. Sure, there's dangerous ideas that I think need to be confronted. And I like the alt-right and, you know, these twisted fucks like Richard Spencer that talk about ethnic cleansing and that kind of shit. Those ideas need to be confronted. But for most of the nonviolent political ideologies, I think we need to start embracing an idea of a ecosystem, of a cooperative society, instead of a monopolistic society where we say, look, America is going to be capitalist and that's just how it's going to be. Or we're going to say, well, China is just going to be communist and that's just how it's going to be. It's like we don't need to go to those extremes. It'd be a lot easier to say, you know what, we're going to be free and everyone can practice things the way they want to practice and try to figure it out, because that's what it is, man. Like, we haven't had enough experimentation because there's been monopolies forever. And, you know, the thing that is said about in a business sense, whenever there's monopolies, it slows down innovation, right? Because there's like no competition. No one to compete against your product. So you get to sit there and you make a car that gets 10 miles to the gallon, and you get to make it for 40 years if you're the only car company. You don't have to improve. And that's where we're at philosophically, dude. Ideologically, we've been having monopolies between capitalist democracy and corporate communism. Like, these two things have held a monopoly on political thinking for the last, you know, 150, 200 years, dude. It's like, we need to start evolving past it.
Yeah, I mean, we will. I think we're going that route. The problem is that there's been so much social control, especially in public schools, that now you have a lot of people that I realize they go right to Google as a source, and you can't be sure anymore about anything, and they'll cite Wikipedia. And so you have a lot of people that have tons of information at their fingertips, but literally you can't disseminate it anymore. And we've got to fix that, right? That ship, some way or shape or form. I think a push to STEM, which maybe not coming under Trump so much, but a push towards STEM, which is, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math, that has to be prioritized, because those are going to be the blue collar jobs, really. You're still going to have white collar creative jobs. Those are still going to be in demand. In fact, I could see Hollywood growing exponentially, really, as entertainment demand grows. But we have to have the next generation of people that fix the machines that take over the jobs people do. And we've got to have a way that people can get all the education they need for free to do something valuable to society. I mean, otherwise we hit a breaking point at a certain point when food becomes too expensive. You know what I mean? It's getting there already. Look at Venezuela if you want to see what happens when the government has all the control.
Exactly, dude. It's not a pretty sight, dude. Like, I feel really bad for anybody living in Venezuela right now, dude, because it's, you know, starvation is basically a regular thing. Hyperinflation, you know, stuff that people in the United States have held deep-seated fears about for a long time that haven't yet, like, officially come to roost. These are the things Venezuela is dealing with, like, at this very moment. You don't hear about it in the news very much, because it's a really touchy situation, because, you know, the United States has also had a very heavy hand down there. In Venezuela. I'ma let 'em know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo.